Well, I'd like to introduce you to our guest panelists tonight. We have Rhea Branderhorst. They all live here in Pella. Tom DeVries and Tunis and Carrie Van Walbeek. And Jim Emmert's going to be videoing for us tonight. So that we'll have a record of this down the road. So, if you would each pass the mic down, share the mic. You need to keep it pretty close to your mouth for people to hear. But tell us how old you were when the war started in the Netherlands, and about your family situation. What did your parents do, and where did you live? Tom, you want to start?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was 12 years old when the Germans invaded the Netherlands. We was on a small dairy farm in the province of Friesland. So I was here about 70 some years now, because I came across in 1948.
Can you tell us about your family? How many brothers and sisters you had?
Yeah, there was four brothers. I was the youngest. So maybe we go into that detail a little bit what happened to our family.
Okay. Rhea?
Yeah, the war started in the Netherlands. I was 8 years old.
And can you get a little closer?
I was 8 years old, and the war was over. I was 12. And we live on the farm, my parents and brothers and siblings, and goes to Amsterdam. And then we got a lot of people walking down. We see that with the bicycles and all from farm to farm to ask for milk or whatever grows on the farm. And yeah, you want to help the people so much if you can. And on Friday, mother got always a big kettle, a pan of soup made, and that from all those people that goes from farm to farm, they say that, on that place you get always a cup of soup. So, and then they were very happy, and they were so hungry and thirsty. Yeah. So that was...
Okay, Carrie.
I was 7 years old when the war started, 12, 13 when the war was over. And I was growing up, I was the youngest of 8 children, and I had older brothers and all the sisters, and my brothers were in the underground, and one of my sister, she brought kind of papers around or worked kind of that way in the underground too, and then we had people coming, staying in our home too. We called them onderduikers. They had to hide away from that had supposed to be into Germany, and then they did not went there, so they stayed off the road, but then they go to other places. And so there were times that we had about 18 people in the house, and the mayor came in the house, and there was another an army officer too that did not follow the orders from the German, so he came to our home too. So you never know who came and who left and who came again, and you saw things happening around you. But my parents told me, you never see anything and you never hear anything, and if somebody asks you something, you never know anything. So because you never know if somebody asks you a question, who that person is, because it can come in to the wrong side, and then yeah, different things going happen, and that could be very sad. And yeah, we went through. I was growing up then just south of Amsterdam, so that last winter from the war, that was the time from that there was no food around, because the Germans, they stopped all the transportation, and there was no food transported to the city or anywhere, so the people in the city didn't have food, there was no heat, and so they came and walked to the countries and tried to find some food by the farmers, so whatever you have some, you share it with other people too.
Carrie, we've always heard rumors that that people ate tulip bulbs. Did that really happen?
Oh yeah, at the farms, like it was a dairy farmer. I lived and grown up on a dairy farm, and then for the feed on for the cattle, they brought sometime out beets, and then we find out or go through the pile of beets that have been dumped with the truck, you know, ordering some good beets in there, and also tulip bulbs, and if something is good yet, yeah, it comes in the house and you cook it and you go and eat it, and what was not good, you know, then the cattle will eat it, cows will eat it, and yeah, the tulip balls is really not bad to eat. Well, I don't know, maybe they treat them now different, that you better don't eat them, but that time they didn't have any chemicals or anything that they were treated with, or so. I think tunas know more about the tulip balls because they eat them more there than we did. Okay,
tunas, tell us about your family and where you were. How old you were and where you lived. And.
Yeah. I lived close by Amsterdam, too, in the town of Apeldoorn. That is about, I don't know, about 45 minutes with a bicycle from Amsterdam. From Amsterdam. And so we got a lot of company in the last, in the hungry years, too, for milk and food and so. And in the morning, there's a curfew. We were in a curfew. You were not able to come outside, or you were not allowed to go outside from 8 in the evening till 4 in the morning, I believe it was, maybe 5 o'clock. But then when we get up for start milk, and then the people were on the door for milk already. So. That was the way it came, and then when we got down, milk, and my sister had a milk can standing there, and she just kept scooping each one and quart milk, and then we never had enough. So that's the way it was with the hunger here, and people were really weak because they didn't get enough to food and so on. And they came on the bicycles without tires, even because the tires were worn out. And there was nothing to get. And so, and then also, there was not much transportation. The railroads in Holland, there's a lot of rail. A lot of people travel with trains, and they didn't go anymore. And also the passengers' buses, there was no gas, and they had a kind of a heater on the bus, so they used wood for transportation of the buses even. So, and yeah, that's all what I want to talk about.
In the movie, make this down. In the movie, you saw the. Let me borrow yours. My battery's dead. In the movie, you saw at the very beginning, people had written the letters, you know, NSB on that one guy's door. NSB was the Dutch Nazi Party, and the people who were in it were called NSBers. Who were members of that, and did you know any of them, and what was their reasoning for that?
Well, they were pretty. That's pretty bad. We experienced that too. And they're supporting the Germans, and you don't know who they are. And so they were watching if you did something wrong. And I, at home, we really had more problems with the people that support the Germans than the Germans themselves. And I remember yet one time that they ransacked the whole house to find something that we were not supposed to have. Even we had hay, and they thought maybe in the hay mount we had a bag of wheat or something. And they were looking for everything, but they didn't find anything. But and we even had somebody in the house that was supposed to be in Germany working there, and it was hiding there. And well, he was on the ground, and they didn't find him either. So, but that we had more problems with those people than the Germans themselves. And we had Germans in the yard too, and it was something. Well, the baker happened to be there too, and they asked for bread, but then the bread was all rationed, you know, and it's on coupons, but and. The baker told them that, and then they say they don't take it, no.
Yeah, in our area, the NSBers are the ones what we would say they was pro-German. They were, they betrayed our family 3 times. So they was very active, and they lived just a very little ways from where we lived. So we had problems with those people. So what we think anyway, they betrayed us, because after the war, they was picked up right away. But you couldn't prove anything, because he was under German control. So they was in, in prison about 3 months or so, and they was back. But the last time when we was in the Netherlands, then we went to church in the morning, Sunday morning, and I hardly ever knew anybody anymore, because we had been there a ways so long. So one older fellow, old as I am, he wanted to talk to me. So my question was to him, what happened to those people that very likely betrayed us? Are they back in society? And his answer was, the grandchildren of those people, they are not back in society. They are shunned. And I told him, that is not right. The grandchildren should not be accountable for what their parents or grandparents did.
Maria, do you want to say anything about that? If you want to, it should be on.
You know, that we were living on the farm, and they know exactly the Germans, you know, they have all registered. How many cows and how many animals and everything that there were. But then in the evening, my father was gone sometimes. And then I asked Mama, where's Dad? Oh, he comes home pretty soon. But then he was out in the barn, and there was no, you don't can have big lights on if that shines out. That was not allowed. But then he was met the underground people from our town, and then they were slaughtering some, maybe a hog or a calf or something like it, you know. And that is, they were helping our own people, not the other people, and otherwise the Germans, they take it all. and we were close to a castle, and they were settled there, those Germans. And then all of a sudden, there he came, and he walked up in the field, and he take the horse along. And you don't can do nothing, just let them go, but otherwise, they can shoot you. And another, for instance, that was too, and they came for milk. No, they was just delivered. The tank came and there was nothing. And they had told that to them. And so now he said, no, I got buttermilk. But they don't, my dad don't speak German and they don't understand my dad. So he said, I like buttermilk. And so he gave the buttermilk along. Oh, they came back and were so mad. They poured it with the other milk and it was all spoiled. And oh, my dad had to have his hands up, and it was really frightening. So everybody has their stories, right?
Then when the war was over, then yeah, we all had the memories. And but then all those Germans, they had a walk home back to Germany. And where did they had to stay at night? And yeah, we were on the farm there. So they came past by our house though, and that was then organized, and they had asked or they can stay. And that was in May, you know, May 10, May 5 was the war over, and that was a couple of days later. Then a whole group came, I think it might be around 100 or so, that stayed overnight at our yard. And the hay mound was empty, which the hay mound was above the cattle barn or the milking barn, and so that they could sleep there. So in the evening, it was a nice evening, and they were all in the backyard, and they were kind of just kind of try to little have a social time. And but my parents told us, the girls too, we had to stay in the house. But we had still some people that were staying by us, and they were not underdogs, but they were people from that came from the city from Amsterdam, and they stayed at our place because they didn't have really a living in Amsterdam. And I even never know how they came that they stayed by us. But he knew the German language, so he got mengen between the soldiers there. And there came a soldier, and he asked him, or we had an organ in the house. And he said, yeah, they have an organ in the house. He said, yeah, I said, I can play an organ. And yeah, he was telling, I'm going, yeah, we are walking back now to home, and I got my wife and family home, and I don't know what I go find home to in Germany, you know. And well, then that man said, yeah, we called him Mr. Nagel. That was, and he went to my dad and he said, there is here a soldier, and he asked, oh, you had an organ in the house and he wanted to play the organ. Well, my dad said, well, there we went, that were your enemies, and where we went through. And now, you know, just a couple of days now, and shall I let him in my house? Well, dad thought a little bit, and okay. And so he let him come in the house, and when he came in the house, and he started playing on that organ, and the music were all the Dutch psalms. And we were singing the Dutch psalms when he was playing that organ. And that's something I never, never forget. So that were a Christian man. And he said, yeah, I did not agree all either what we had to do. You know, he was a German and he was called by the German for in the army. And that is something that will always stay in my mind. And it was just a couple of days after, you know.
Here we have.
You got another question?
Well, I did have another question, but I was wondering about the church's stance. I've read a lot that said some churches in the Reformed and Christian Reformed tradition said you need to help, and others said, no way, we can't do that. I mean, what was the situation where you were living?
That's a good question, because we were members of the, what we call the Reformed Church, the Christian Reformed Church. And I know every Sunday, then the minister would pray for the queen and the family. And if you would have one betrayer in your congregation, you would, once they would say, you don't do that again. And if he would do it again, he would go to the concentration camp. Because that's what happened. I cannot recall the name of the book that was in the province of Calderland. He prayed for the queen and the family, and he did it again, and he landed in a concentration camp, and he wrote a whole book about it. So that was our situation in our particular church.
Yeah, now Tom was telling that from the preachers, you know, in the church, but we know a case that the preacher was preaching and there was somebody sitting in the church too. That was, or that was a German, or that was, I don't know, it happened there in Drenthe. But the preacher was killed right there in the church. They shot him. And he was preaching there. And that was not the only case that have happened.
Tell us what happened to your family. I know, Tom, you had some interesting stories about your brothers and what happened and the rest of you.
Well, maybe that would take 10 or 15 minutes, and I don't want to do that because I'll tell you the last episode that was in the last part of the war, I think that January 14th or 15th, and a whole bunch of Germans were around us, but that was nothing unusual. But they came to our house at a certain time then in the morning, and they took me in a room, not in the kitchen, in a front room, asked, "Where's your brother?" I said, "My brother was here this morning, but I don't know where he was." Of course, I knew. But at any rate, then, before long, they said, you have to go in the hay mouth and you have to remove the straw. And I do know who was underneath the straw. That was my brother. And we had a high-ranking officer from the former Dutch army and a neighbor. Because the neighbor lived right close to us, and he said to my dad, "Peter, do you have a place for me to hide?" "Oh, yeah," my dad said, "I think we have a pretty good place." So they told me, "Just go in the hay mouth and remove that straw." And I was starting to do that, and then I heard stuff in the where the cows were. And they was breaking the wall down, and I knew he had a radio there. And a radio, that was a bad thing for the Germans, because we listened practically every evening, I think it was 6:45, from about 15 minutes from the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, and that told us really what happened, because in the paper every day was a V, victory, Germany wins for Europe on all fronts, and we knew it was a lie. So we listened to that, and when I heard that they broke that wall down, boy, I thought I better get that straw out of the way, because I knew that it was a lost cause anyway. So then and then the Germans were standing there with their revolvers, I think that they had, and then they all came from underneath that straw. Oh, and they said, "Hand the hoe, hands high," because they was looking in our house. They were looking for Jews. They were looking for that B had a former. They had a soldier there. They didn't know all the details, and we were supposed to have weapons, but we did not have no Jews. We didn't have no weapons, but we had that former Dutch soldier. So we all marched outside, and we were standing on the street, and I didn't have my wooden shoes on. So the soldier went along and got my wooden shoes, and we had a go with our hands high, and my dad said, "I'm not going to do that. Now you have to shoot me, because we didn't do anything wrong." But boy, I did, because boy, I want to live. But anyway, about a fourth of a mile or so, there was a truck, and we were the last ones on there, and I think there was about 24 to 30 people on there. So we was marched, went to the Leeuwarden, that's the capital of Friesland, and it was around 12 o'clock, and we had soup. Well, I looked at that stuff, but I said, "I cannot eat that." But boy, in the evening, we had the same soup. Boy, I could eat it, because I was young, you know. Seemed like we was always hungry. But at any rate, my brother and a soldier, former soldier, and my neighbor, they were shipped to Germany, to the concentration camp. And oh yeah, by the way, they interrogated my dad. And my dad, he was pretty blunt. He told the interrogators that when you came to Holland first, we got along pretty good. But when you started with the Jews, and before that time, all of the former Dutch soldiers, they had a report here and there and everywhere, because they had to go to Germany to work in the factories and I don't know where all, but because Germany was not doing so good in the Soviet Union. So my brother came back, I think the 7th of May or 8th of May, and I could see who he was, but he was a skeleton, and he lived for 10 years, and he died. The former soldier, he was interrogated very, very badly, and he was shipped to Germany, but he died. He never came back. My oldest brother, who was a school teacher, but there was too many school teachers at that time in the Netherlands, So he volunteered for six years in the Dutch army to what we call Indonesia now. And when the Japs came in 1942 and conquered Indonesia, of course, he was put in a concentration camp. And he lived for about 6 months, and he died in a concentration camp. But the bad part of that was in 1942, and we didn't know about it till 1947, and I think it was in June in 1947, so that was almost five years later, because there were ships coming from Indonesia at that time, and it had names on there, people that wanted to come back to the Netherlands and soldiers, but my brother's name was never listed, so there was always home. So that's one of the things I want to point out. Two more things, but don't have the time for that.
I have a question.
Okay.
Can you hear me up there?
Yeah.
Bella sent a lot of food and grain and clothing and so on. Did any of you see that?
Yes. Here. Go ahead. That's an amazing thing when you ask that, because right after the war, we got a letter from my dad had three brothers and a sister. They lived around here. And my goodness, we got so much clothes, everything you could think of. Even they were supposed to be all used stuff. But my uncle, he was well-to-do, so bought new shoes and put a little scratch on there. So before we know it, those people said, well, you look like Americans. So how much stuff that we did not get from our relation, that was amazing. I don't know if some of you folks had the same thing.
How about food? Did you see food?
There was hardly any food left in the last year. Everything was on coupons, you know, and ration, and yeah, there were a lot of soup places you can buy soup, and every time when you get soup, the soup was more water than anything else. So that's what the people had to eat. But then we on the farm, we take care of ourselves. We have a big garden, and we ate a lot of dinners in the evening and in the afternoons.
And then the planes to drop the food.
And the end, the last month when the war was over, even the food was coming from the air, that the Allies, the British airplanes, they dropped cans of crackers down, and I found one in the field too, so that was pretty good. My mother was really happy on that. a lot of people died out of hunger, even, especially in the big cities.
The food from England, the Allies from England, they dropped the food and the planes, and basically it was graham crackers that were the first things, because everybody was hungry and was not used to food anymore, and what can you eat first, and so that the graham crackers were good things, and the tea bags.
Tea
bags and cream crackers. That's what he remember. And clothes. And That was something else.
What were your memories from the day that the war ended? I mean, were there tanks going through the streets and everything, just like in the movie?
Well, the first, right away, we all have to stay quiet because we knew the war was over, but it was not safe yet. Because the mayor and that army officer that stayed at our place too for a while, and they went, they thought we had to go to our jobs and to the office of town. But they were captured by the Germans. And they were kept, they could hold them for about 2 days. Because May 5 is really the day that is then Netherlands was free. But I think it was about by May 7, then there was a group from underground. They had organized the freedom, you know, the mayor and that army officer. But just, it was on the Sunday morning that we came out of church, and then we heard, the first thing we heard, that they were home and they were free. The German had to let them go. But it was really, 2 days was really stressful. But you thought, you know, right away you could go. But it took about maybe a week when they really, that you dared to get it out, you know, really be on the street. And then, you know, finally, I don't know when they had all the parties, they had, you know, different things organized and so, but that all took a little while.
About the food, we was, seemed like we was always hungry. For a while there, we was much better off than the people in North and South Holland, because we had always plenty of potatoes. So for a while we had potatoes for breakfast, potatoes for dinner, potatoes for supper, and then we was, seemed like, then we had a little coffee time when we went to work, and before we was on the field, we was eating our little coffee time already. So we had food, but it seemed like, you know, we was practically always hungry. But it was much worse, of course, when we had to work for the Germans. By the way, my dad and I went to. We had to build a defense wall in the province of Overijssel, wherever that is. Maybe you folks know and maybe don't. And we didn't have enough food, but it was much better than, of course, in the concentration camp in the Netherlands. And it's an amazing thing what you said, too. We had one guard that he was not very tall, and I could understand a little German and talk a few words, and he said, you know, he wished that he was home. Yeah, I said too, I wish that we was home. But about that food then, about 3 or 4 days after the war, then we got white bread. Man, you folks know that bread was not very good, was it? So it was just like cake. You know, that was something wonderful. And that was, and another thing is what was mentioned, when we was liberated. On a Saturday afternoon, maybe 5 or 6 o'clock, we heard all kinds of music. Oh, about that was right by the courthouse in our village. We didn't go. I had worked hard, I think. My dad, my folks, of course, didn't go because they didn't know what happened to my brother in Germany. They didn't know what happened to my older brother in Indonesia. So we didn't have much of a celebration, but boy, we had a good celebration uptown, all right. because he was liberated by the Canadians. Probably you folks too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you
want
to
add anything?
I got a story to tell you.
Okay,
oh, tune this one.
Right. Yeah. I remember yet, we were one evening on supper at home, and there was a little noise in the back, and it came closer, and there the policeman from the city came. Soaked wet, and what happened in uptown, in our town, middle of town, there was a German truck cutting fire for one reason or the other, and the Germans got pretty mad, and they went to the mayor and told them to get all the horses from the farms, we need them, and the mayor refused that, so and in order that that he refused that, so in order of that, so he got to get away to hide. So he hit, and the police force from the city all went out town too. So and so our town didn't have any security really, but that went okay. But then, the mayor got caught with what she told already. When the war was over, really, and they got caught, and then, and the police, but they got by. They were hit, and they never found them. So that everything turned out okay after the war was over.
Another question.
Wait. Wait a minute. If you have a question, I'm going to, call on you, and then I'm going to have you stand up and say it really loudly, okay, so everybody can hear it?
Okay.
Hey, Jack, what's your question?
What was the Germans' purpose for being in the Netherlands? Or was it for the shipping? Or was it, what did they take the Netherlands?
What was the Germans' purpose for being in the Netherlands?
Well, Hitler was the ruler, and he thought to get whole Europe. So he took Netherlands and Belgium and France, and then he tried to go to Russia too, and that was really the downside. Then he got too much fire going on, and that was. The Britain and Americans came, landed in France, and that. But then why? So that he got a big head. That's all that I can say.
Well, it started more in 1938 or 39 already. That was Russian with Poland. If you get that whole history. And and then Hitler, he took the power, and he thought he wanted to have it all.
From things that I have read and articles I've read, the Germans thought they were doing the Dutch a favor. You are our kin. You're kind of Aryan too, and so we're going to come in, and you're going to love us. Was kind of the idea at the very beginning, and they learned that wasn't actually true.
Yeah, from the Hitler side, they said that you folks are good people in the Netherlands, but we are on our way to England, foreign, they call it, foreign to England. So that was really the question. Why they came to the Netherlands, because in the First World War, from 1914 to 1918, the Netherlands was neutral. And Hitler had used that many, many times. Oh, he would never invade the Netherlands, but he did, didn't he?
Yeah, I know some of you have questions. I don't know if we'll have time for all of them, but if you have one, anybody want to ask a question? Arnie, stand up, would you, and just say it really loudly.
Well, you were talking about the tulip bulb, and how did you prepare them? I mean, would you eat them like potatoes, or?
I just cook them like potatoes, is not?
Yes, yeah.
Just cook them like potatoes.
Oh, then put butter on them and salt?
Oh, well, they don't cook like... You don't fix dinners like here, they do. You just cook them and eat them.
Arnie, we'll find you a recipe.
I don't know they eat them. They don't know how to make a sauce.
Do they taste like chicken?
More like potatoes. Yeah.
Anybody else have a question? Yeah, Brendan?
We have eat sugar beets and tulips.
Yeah.
But to me, the tulips taste the best.
Some of the people who sided with the Germans, I had heard stories that a few of them disappeared afterward. Did you guys ever have any experience with that or any stories like that in your local areas?
Of the NS Bears disappearing after the war? That they were taken out? Is that?
Yeah. And maybe I can answer that question. It sounds like, I think, the middle of September, it looked like that the whole Netherlands would be liberated. That was, we all probably, most of you heard of a bridge too far. And that's as far as they went. So, your question was?
Well, did the Dutch people take revenge and kill any of these NSBers after the war?
Well,
no, they shaved
their heads. Well, I know one time, maybe I could relate that very quickly, there was a milk strike. And so, my dad went one place. My uncle went to the other side, do not bring any milk tonight because we are going to strike, because all the former Dutch officers, soldiers had to work in Germany. I think I counted that out. So we had one family just very little ways from us. They sent the milk to the factory. On the way back, we got... I don't know, my dad and my brother, if it was first a shouting match, I don't know. But they came off their milk cart, and the older man, that was a son, and the father, the son, and a daughter was on that wagon, I know that. So the father got his knife out of his pocket, and he was going to stick my dad in the back, so I jumped on his shoulders. I think he was not very big, and so he tumbled on the cement there on the road, and for some reason or another we didn't know it, but he must have cut himself, because my uncle they came across and say, you peoples, you better go back home, be something. First, do not happen. And then another young man said to my dad, Peter, shall we kill those people right now? So that was the end of that. But then over about an hour later, by the way, the head of the police in our county was pro-German. See, that was a bad thing for a lot of us, because the good police, one of them, of the boys, came about an hour later and said, you people have to move, all of you, because you will be all arrested. And it turned out that they wanted my dad and my brother, but they didn't. They didn't want me, and I was really the culprit, because the guy cut himself, of course. He went to the pro-German police and he said, see all the blood on my hand. I really don't know where he was bleeding, but I was not arrested. Then another time, I should have been arrested, and I was not. But the third time, I was arrested because we had all had to have identification cards. And the underground has changed my brother, who was 18 to 16, and mine from 16 to 14. So when they came to our house, while I was digging on that straw, they found a register book, because every family had to have a register book. And there were the dates on there, because as soon as one of the family had a boy or a girl, I believe in 3 days or so, you had to go to the courthouse and register. So their records were good. So when the Germans found a register book, well, you know, I was 14 years old, and they said, I was 16 years old. That's why they arrested me. If the underground would have never changed ours, our dates, I would have been all right. So I was arrested, and I shouldn't have.
But question what they did with the NSBers. During the war, we had Queen Wilhelmina yet, and she had said, when the war are over, there is no room for the NSBers in the Netherlands. And so if there was a farmer that was an NSBer, then after the war, then I don't know where they took him, or they took him to a jail, or they picked him up somewhere. So then there were other young farmers that wanted to start farming, and they could get those farms. And that happened that way. But then about maybe 2 years later or so, that all changed. Then that farmer, that was, we know a particular place in our hometown too, you know. And then that farmer came back, and then he came back. He was allowed to get back on his own farm. And what happened to the one, that young couple, that was trying to get started on that farm, he said, well, I go to America or I go to Canada. And that's where the whole immigration got started. There was no room. Holland was not building up.
Maybe your folks know Henry Hogendoorn. And it happened to him too that way. He was on a farm from an NSBer, and then he was set off again. And then he thought, well, I better go to America.
Maybe you did. I don't know if you caught it in the movie, but the guy next door who was the NSBer was evidently not really one. He was hiding Jews. Did you catch that little girl in the Sarah. Making the snowman? So he was kind of a double agent.
Is that why he smashed
it? Yeah, that's why he smashed it, because he didn't have any kids at home. So if somebody saw a snowman, yeah. Anybody else have a question that you'd like to ask?
What struck me is about those two young boys in the film. They were very young, and the way it was where in our area, there was not young ones was taking papers of illegal stuff to the underground. They was all young ladies, I would say from 16 to 18, because the Germans very, very seldom bothered women, mm-hmm. except like Corrie ten Boom, because they had Jews, that whole family was. But by and large, that struck me in the film.
Okay. One book I would recommend is by Deet Iman called Things We Couldn't Say. about her work in the underground when she was 16, 17 years old, and most of her network was other women, like you say. What else in the movie? I mean, I wondered about that well-fed looking horse that late in the war. Well, I kind of thought, I thought maybe by now he would have been made into a meal. I mean, did people have horses that late in the war that were not?
Yeah. Horse meat is very good meat. We had a neighbor, person, couple neighbors over on our farm where I grew up, and that was a slaughter place. And that was for slaughter. If there was somebody that a cow died or something, then could go, he slaughtered it, and then people from the town can come and get meat there. But then the horse too. And the horse meat, people, very healthy, healthy meat. And I don't know if people here eat horse meat, but they.
Well, I think
very well
if we were hungry enough, we would eat horse meat, yes.
All right. My father, by the way, I'm Nellie Joan Verhoef Van Kral Zylstra and a few other names.
Joan, you want to speak it?
Can you hear me? Am I projecting enough? I'm a teacher, I can project. Anyway, my father is Carrie's oldest brother. He was the oldest of the family, and William Verhoef, Bill Verhoef, and Carrie was the youngest. How old was Dad?
Oh, he was 12 years older than I was.
Yeah, so he would have been about 25, somewhere in there?
No, when the war started, he was in the service. He was 19, 20.
And some of the memories of my father were that he was part of the underground also, and when there were thunderstorms, they would shoot off the weapons to test the weapons. So that was part of it. And also talks about, Anne said, the Unterdeichers, those were lot were Jews that we were hiding in the hay mow. And I'd heard these stories all my life. And it took me going back to the Netherlands to figure out how, you know, I was used to square bales. Well, they have a huge hay mow with all this hay blown in there, and then with they would make tunnels in there. And my mother also said that she is sure that one time a German officer went to look up there, and she's sure that he spotted them but never said anything. So there were Germans that were had heart sympathizers also. And also another fact about myself is my birthday, I was born February 19, 1945. That was during the hunger winter of Amsterdam. That was when there was very little food in Amsterdam because the Holland or Amsterdam part of the Netherlands was not liberated until May 5, like my aunt said. Most of the babies died that year. This comes straight from my mother. I did not. And part of it was because we did live on a dairy farm. We lived on a farm.
Yeah, question in the back?
I've read that some historians think tens of thousands of ducks died in that famine.
Yes.
Yeah, do we know numbers? How many people died during that winter?
That's hard to measure because some died after the war yet because they couldn't get my grandparents, I think they died on the war too because my grandfather died. Yeah, that's for sure that he died on because he was diabetic and didn't have the right food. And because of it, then my grandmother died in 47. And I think that was an after effect of the war.
Amsterdam, that was maybe other big cities too, but Amsterdam, we were very close to Amsterdam. But there was no heat, and people, they tried to burn some wood in their wood stove, and they took the chairs They took the wood around the window sills, just in their houses, you know, just where they live. Just have a little wood to burn to get a little bit of heat. And it's just unbelievable what people did. And then when some, like Ria was talking about, the people from the from Amsterdam that goes out in the morning early already, try to go on a bike, you know, try to get food by the farmers. But then the men from the age of 18 to 45, they're not supposed to be on the road. Or they're supposed to be all in Germany working there. So if a man go out for food, they's dressed as a lady. And we heard there are kind of fun stories about. There's not the kind of people have fun with it too to do that. You know, the daughters dress the dad up as a lady, you know, and then he goes out for food. But then they go to the farmers and they try to get a quart milk. But some way we know, and that happened sometime before they got home, they didn't come home with the milk because the Germans had taken it off already. You know, they'd been on the road and they took that food away from them. But that in Amsterdam, and how many people died there from the hunger. And we have had too, we had chairs by the outside door, because they came by the door and they were just so weak that you sit there, you know. And like what Joan said too, you know, and especially the babies and so. There was no food, really, total, nothing. And
yeah, Tudor mentioned that it's hard to say how many died, because in our case, my brother came back as a skeleton, but he lived for 10 years, but so it's kind of hard to say. That was the result of a concentration camp, and very likely that's what happened, but eaten tube bulbs and so on, and quite a number of people probably died later on. So I think that's hard to say.
And then all the Jews, you know, their concentration camps, you know, the thousands and thousands, you know.
But by the way, we had a boy about 10 years old, I guess. He came also from Amsterdam, because the parents would know that he would stay alive, because in the province of Friesland it was a lot better than in Amsterdam. So that boy stayed till right after the war, and then he went back home. So there was a lot of younger kids that went to different provinces where there's more to eat.
Question?
I just looked online and it said that during the actual hunger winter, they estimate between 18 and 22,000 people died.
Between 18 and 22,000 died directly during the actual winter. Yeah, okay. Why don't you tell us about how old were you when you came to America, and what made you decide to come?
We came as newlyweds, still on our honeymoon.
What year did you get? What year did you come?
Well, we came in 52.
52.
Well, Tunis. When war was over, then he was called into the army, to the Dutch army, and he was sent to Indonesia. And you went there for three years, and when he came back in the 50s, and then we met. and by that time, Holland was not on his feet yet, you know, for jobs and so. He could stay home, and his dad had enough work for him, but the country was too small for him. He wanted to see bigger things. And immigration, that was really going on all over. And somebody, I said, maybe it was a disease that was going on. Young people, they used to find places somewhere else. So we had relatives here, and then that was the way that we started for immigration too.
Housing shortage was...
Housing, severe housing shortage.
Yeah, housing,
yeah.
There's no place.
Yeah, what?
Did they have to have sponsors to come?
Did you have to have a sponsor to come?
Yeah.
Yes.
In my case, I was drafted also in the Dutch Army. I was supposed to go like tunis to the Dutch East Indies, but somehow that became a law. If you wanted to immigrate, that you didn't have to go to the army. So when I found that out, it would take me less than 1 second to go to one of my uncles, can you sponsor me? And in 2 or 3 weeks, I had my papers. So, and one of the reasons was that you could immigrate because the government felt that if all of those soldiers come back from Indonesia, what are we going to do with them? So that was one reason why I came. Plus, just before I left, I came in January 1948, then there came another law that if there was a war victim in World War II, he would also be exempt from going to the army. So, and that's happened in my case that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ria, when did you come?
I came to the United States in 1956 with my husband and the 3 children, and we came for the future of the children, you know. Holland was crowded, it was hard to find housing, and so, and I was not for it for a couple of years already that I hold it back, but all of a sudden we decided to come.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Any last questions? Yeah.
I can't stand up. Okay, I'll
hold. Okay, yell then, okay.
Why were all those young men... What was they doing in Indonesia? If they'd have all been home, maybe they could have kept the Jews out of there.
Well, that was a Dutch colony.
Yeah. Yeah, but why did they need all those Dutch soldiers up there?
To defend it from the Japanese.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, you read stories about Indonesia during World War II. It's very, very grim.
That was worse than the war in Holland.
Yeah, worse, almost worse than the war in Holland. Yeah,
yeah.
It was.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
You were all on dairy farms pretty much and were milking cows. Was there a law from the Germans that you had to continue to milk so many? Because you weren't eating them and you weren't sending them to Amsterdam and Rotterdam to be eaten by the people. So you were, you know, you're doing a good thing by producing milk and butter and cream, I suppose. But I just wondered, you know, have to milk a certain number or how did that work?
Well, the way it was with the Germans, they ration the cows. You could have so many and no more. And in our farm was it that you got too much hay for the cows to feed. But then, on the other hand, the Germans covered a lot of farms with water, so they couldn't get. They got to get rid of the cows because they have no feed. And actually, then we took some cows from the others. In fact, in our town, the other side of the town was all covered with water, the farm ground. So there are polders, and then they cover it, and you leave it that covered. And the water don't run away either. So it's off the hills here. That way we got a lot of cows that helped those farmers out. They were able to keep the cows when the war was over and they went back home again.
But some way it was allowed to sell some milk to the people from the town. There was a quotas that you have to sell to the factory, or where the milk goes to, but there was some way was allowed that you can sell so much to the people from the town that can come came to your house, you know, and the people that came to Amsterdam and so, that there was milk that went to the factory and was milk that you sold then to the people from town.
In our case, probably we had about four, maybe five families that came two or three times a week to get some milk, or maybe 2 quarts or maybe 3 quarts, something like that. But we was not supposed to do that, but we did it anyway. Plus the fact that if you was a farmer, you could keep milk for yourself. There was not really too much of a restriction. So that's why you could get by with helping rather the people in your neighborhood or bring the milk to the factory and have the butter and the cheese go to the German army.
Time for one more question. Yeah, Nick.
My dad was in the underground. What was their purpose?
There was several purposes. There was in the underground because they believed not in the Nazi system. And they had to go to Germany to work. So they went in the underground because those former Dutch soldiers, if they didn't go, some of them, they went in hiding, we would call that the underground. They worked in the underground. They went one time, they changed their clothes in German uniforms, and they went to a pro farmer because they told us that was something unusual, and they had a real good bicycle. And of course, they taught German, and they got a bicycle from that pro German. But other than that, they did also, I do know in our area, there was a high German officer was killed from the underground because he knew a lot more, and then that man got killed, and then about 10 days later there was 22 people that was arrested. In times past, mostly ministers, lawyers, and so on, and they was shut down by Dokkum. That's all kind of about 2 miles from where we lived, and it was a town just about like Pella. I would say a tourist town, and they was shot, and they had to lay there for 3 days. So if you killed one German, you could, especially a high ranking German, that was very bad. But I do know that was very serious business, because if something like that happened, there was a prayer before they ever did that in most cases. So there was different groups of people that worked in the underground.
Well, we could probably stand here all night and ask questions. This has been so fascinating, and I'm so appreciative that you came and shared your story with us and made us a lot more appreciative of the blessings that we have, and it's incredible. So we thank you for coming tonight. Thank you.
everyone. Pick up some stuff on the way out if you'd like.